So we'll be looking at Jesus disregards tradition. He's going to head to Phoenicia. He's going to feed the 4,000. He's going to do a lot of miracles. Then we're going to see Peter's second confession, the transfiguration, and then he's going to return to Galilee. So Jesus is going to be moving around a lot tonight. And I, with all the traveling he's doing, this probably represents several weeks, if not even a month or a month and a half worth of travel and preaching and healing, or well, miracles in general.
Yeah.
So we'll look at just a few of these things, of course. We only have what was recorded for us, and we know that if we were to know all that Jesus did, that there wouldn't be enough books in the world to fill it. So let's get, I don't need that anymore. Okay, so we'll start with Matthew chapter 15. We'll be reading verses 1 through 20. Somebody want to take the first 10 verses of that?
Then some Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem, saying, Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread. And he answered them and said to them, you hypocrites, rightly did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men. Oh dear, this one's good. Okay.
Is that 10?
Yeah. And then he called the multitude to him and said to them, hear and understand.
All right, and somebody finish that off, 11 through 20.
And it's Matthew 15.
Yeah.
Not what enters into the mouth defiles the man, but what proceeds out of the mouth, this defiles the man. Then the disciples came and said to him, do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement? But he answered and said, every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant shall be rooted up. Let them alone, they are blind guides of the blind, and if a blind man guides a blind man, both will fall into a pit. Peter answered and said to him, explain the parable to us. And he said, are you still lacking in understanding also? Do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth passes into the stomach and is eliminated? But the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and those defile the man? For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adulteries, fornications, thieves, or thefts, false witnesses and slanders. These are the things which defile the man. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man.
All right. So let's start with, that was our reading, Matthew 15, verses 1 through 20. And the parallel account is Mark 7, verses 1 through 23. We won't read that. We will look after we, actually, I wanted to look at John chapter 7. It's just the first verse. It reads, after these things, Jesus was walking in Galilee, for he was unwilling to walk in Judea, because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Hang on to that verse. We're gonna be referring to that in just a minute. That is another verse similar to John chapter 5 and verse 18, which we'll be looking at a little bit down the road here in just a minute. So, what tradition did Jesus completely disregard in this reading?
Washing his hands.
Oh, okay, washing. Bathing. We see that the Pharisees had as tradition, and this has been evidently going on for a long time, probably several hundred years. I think these are traditions that were picked up when they were in Assyrian captivity, or when they were in captivity to the Medes and Persians, right? After the Medes and Persians took over the Assyrian kingdom. We see that they picked up these traditions of washing and bathing, and they were enforcing these traditions as the law of Moses. Nowhere in the law of Moses was it spelled out that before you eat, you had to wash your hands. And if you didn't wash your hands before you eat, then you were defiled. That's nowhere in the law. You're not going to find that in the first five books of the Bible. But the Pharisees, in however long it took them over time, had added this tradition. And we when we look at the reading, they specifically call it that too. They're not ashamed to call it a tradition. They say, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? This is not the law of Moses that they're breaking. This is tradition. But they're the elders, so shouldn't everybody be following what these learned, knowing people who evidently know the law of Moses forwards and backwards? Shouldn't everybody be following these traditions of men? What does Jesus say about this tradition?
That there isn't a tradition.
Well,
food doesn't defile them.
Exactly. It's a tradition. Yeah. That's what he says specifically. This is not part of the law. These are things that have been added by men. And when men add to the law of God, what does that usually bring about?
Transgression,
sin. Okay? When we add to the God's law, we are sinning. And it usually leads to sin. And these Pharisees binding these traditions on other people, especially Jesus' disciples, who are doing nothing wrong, who are not breaking any laws, who are eating with unwashed hands, are binding traditions, and in doing so, are causing sin. They're causing themselves to sin, they're causing other people to sin, because these traditions are not part of the law of Moses, and you can't say they are. If you say that these are part of that, they're calling them traditions, of course, but these traditions of men are held so highly that these people think that there's laws being broken. Why do your disciples not follow the traditions of the elders? Look, they're eating with unwashed hands. So Jesus disregards that tradition completely. He obliterates it in this explanation. And he does so in kind of a funny way. If we take a look down a little further, let's look at Matthew chapter 15 and verse 3. He answers the Pharisees' question with what? An accusation of not following the law, of breaking law. Not tradition, they're breaking law. He says, for God said, honor your father and mother, and the one who speaks evil of father and mother is to be put to death. But you say, whoever says to his father and mother, whatever I have that would help you, has been given to God. He is not to honor his father and mother, and by this you have invalidated the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites, rightly did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me, and in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. He just nails them to the wall with this. Absolutely obliterates their question of, why aren't we eating with washed hands? Because you guys are breaking the law of Moses right in front of all of these people. You will not honor your father and mother, take care of them in their old age, because you say the money I had set aside for my parents, I gave to God. It's Corban. It's specifically dedicated to God for God's use. So I can't give it to my parents anymore. So my parents are just going to have to starve. That is breaking God's law. And that is absolutely not okay. That gets Jesus... the hairs on the back of his neck stand straight up. You can see him just absolutely being upset with these people who are talking about washing hands when they are hypocrites, just screaming hypocrites. They aren't keeping God's law. And then Jesus said to the crowd, now he was talking directly to the Pharisees here, and of course the people are around them. But then Jesus goes on to talk to the people, and he says, it is not what enters the mouth he's explaining the traditions of men and how they are not important. So he didn't answer the Pharisees' question directly to the Pharisees. He accused them of breaking law. Now he's going to answer their question to the rest of the crowd. He's going to say, it is not what enters the mouth that defiles a person, but what comes out of the mouth that defiles a person. The Pharisees knew exactly what he meant by that. Because look what his disciples said. They came to him and said, do you not know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this statement? Well, of course they were. They're sinners. They're breaking God's law. And it was pointed out right in front of this whole crowd. And that really upset those Pharisees. I can imagine. When you do something wrong and that instant karma comes and gets you, right? Right in front of you, in front of everybody. It really kind of upsets you, right? It really makes you mad. Because, you know, the little voice in the back of your mind is saying, you know, I don't think I'm right about this, but I'm going to hold my position anyway. And then that instant karma hits you. And everybody around you knows that you're wrong. You're embarrassed. You know you're wrong. They know you're wrong. And it humiliates you. And that's what the disciples pointed out to Jesus. Do you not understand? You just humiliated these Pharisees, these elders, these learned people in front of the whole crowd? And Jesus doesn't care. He answered and said, every plant which my heavenly Father did not plant will be uprooted. These traditions of men were not God's law. They are there to be uprooted and burned. They are not to be followed. Leave them alone. They are blind guides of blind people, and if a person who is blind guides another who is blind, they both will fall into a pit. I think everybody understands what Jesus was saying there. These Pharisees have lured people in with their traditions, their non-law, man-made traditions, not from God, but from men, and are leading them in sin. And those people who choose to follow the Pharisees in those traditions are just as blind as the Pharisees are. That's what Jesus points out. Peter said to him, explain this parable to us. And Jesus then gets a little upset with his disciples, right? Especially with Peter for wanting an explanation of a relatively easy to understand idea. So good Jesus, with the crowd around him, says, okay. He says, do you not understand that everything that goes into the mouth passes into the stomach? We eat it. It goes through the alimentary canal, comes out the other end. Does that defile you? No, your body absorbs the nutrients, gets rid of what it doesn't need. There's no defilement there. But the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart. And those things defile the person. Jesus is pointing out, and we understand washing our hands, bacteria, these things. But again, the idea that you can't eat with a little dirt on your hands. When we have a work party here at the church building, I remember Jerry Bassett used to have a work party all the time. Used to be at the work party all the time. And he'd run over to McDonald's and grab like 2 dozen just little hamburgers for everybody to have. So everybody could eat a burger while they were at the work party. And I didn't see people lining up to use the bathroom to wash their hands. We were scrubbing walls, scrubbing the pews, vacuuming. No, we ripped the wrappers off those things and choked them down. We understand that the chances of you getting sick from having dirty hands and eating food is slim to none, right? That's what your immune system is for. Jesus understands that too. These Pharisees obviously are trying to enforce something that is not law. Okay? And Jesus goes on to say in verse 18, but the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart. And those are the things that defile a person. These traditions of men that are being enforced by these elders, by these Pharisees, are defiling those who follow them. Because that's not God's law. For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murders, acts of adultery, and other immoral sexual acts, thefts, false testimonies, and slanderous statements. These are the things that defile the person, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the person. You may get sick, but you are not spiritually defiled by eating with dirty hands. Alright, so how did Jesus respond to the Pharisees? By showing them how hypocritical they are. And then how did Jesus answer their accusatory question? By telling everybody around them just how wrong they were and just how ignorant they are about the law of Moses that they were living under. Let's move on to the next. This is just a real short thing. Matthew chapter 15 and verse 21. What we're going to see here is, what did Jesus just do to the Pharisees?
Rebuked them.
Rebuked them? Humiliated them? What do you think their response was?
We're going to kill him.
All right? If we look at, I wanted to look at that that verse, John chapter 5 and verse 18. I'm going to grab that real quick. If somebody has that, John chapter 5 and verse 18, go ahead and read that. That goes along with John chapter 7 and verse 1 that we just read.
For this reason, therefore, the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him.
All right? There's your answer. There's your answer for what's going to happen next. So let's read Matthew chapter 15 and verse 21.
Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon.
All right. So where did Jesus go? He went to Tyre and Sidon.
Phoenicia,
correct. Yeah, that's the overall area that Tyre and Sidon abide in. And why did Jesus leave Galilee for Tyre and Sidon? And the hint was there with John 5:18.
He just left because he knew he was being persecuted.
He knew he would be. Yeah. He knew exactly. Jesus, unlike us, knew the hearts of those men around him. He knew exactly what those Pharisees wanted to do to him. He knew that they wanted to kill him. He knew that what their hearts were. He knew they were planning to do so. He's been telling his disciples for a while now that he's going to die. And he knew the hearts of these men were absolutely black. They wanted him dead. He had humiliated them one too many times. So Jesus left. He left. It wasn't his time yet, and we see him do this more than once, where he just leaves when he knows that these men are looking to kill him, and it's not his time to die yet. So, he did that to escape from the death threats and that he was experiencing in Judah and around that southern western side of Galilee. So, let's look at the next one here. Matthew chapter 15, verses 22 through 28. So again, we're up in Phoenicia. This is the area Tyre and Sidon are in. Somebody want to read Matthew 15, 22 through 28?
Canaanite woman from that area came to Jesus. The woman cried out, "Lord, Son of David, please help me. My daughter has a demon and she is suffering very much." But Jesus did not answer the woman. So the followers came to Jesus and begged him, "Tell this woman to go away. She's following us and shouting." Jesus answered, "God sent me only to the lost sheep, the people of Israel." And the woman came to Jesus again. She bowed before him and said, "Lord, help me." Jesus answered, "It's not right to take the children's bread and give it to the dogs." The woman said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat pieces of food that fall from their master's table." Jesus answered, "Woman, you have great faith. I will do what you ask me to do." And at that moment, the woman's daughter was healed.
All right. So, get back to that. What did the Canaanite woman want from Jesus? What was her request?
Healing of her daughters.
Healing of her daughter. Very simple. We've seen Jesus heal people many times. We saw one of the first miracles he did was a Roman guard who walked up and said, "Jesus, my child is sick, please heal him." And, you know, Jesus, he understood the faith of this man, and he said, "I'll come over there." And he said, no, you don't come here. All you have to do is say it, and it'll happen. And Jesus said the same thing to him. He said, "Your faith is so great. Your child is healed." And that Roman guard went home, and when he approached home, he was told by his servants that his child had been healed. He asked what had happened. They told him yesterday at about, you know, when you were talking to Jesus about whatever it was, midday. And he knew that was exactly when Jesus had said it. He understood that all he had to do was ask and that Jesus could do it. This woman understood that. Go ahead, Ron.
Interesting that Jesus would say something like, "Well, what I have, I'm only sent to the children of Israel, the house of Israel, not for these dog of foreigners or these Canaanites." And yet, all during his ministry, people came to him from all over. Mm-hmm. He healed them all, like the Roman centurion.
Right.
Was okay. Not Israelite.
Well, I don't know if he was or not. I don't know if he was a Jew. We know that there were some Jews that were also Romans. Paul was one of them. Yeah. And it is entirely possible that this Roman guard was a Jew that was part of the Roman legion. That because we know that the Jews had become, that many Jews had some Roman or Greek. The Jews were not Roman citizens. You had to be born from a Roman citizen to be a Roman citizen. Well, Paul was one of those. His mother was a Jew, father was a Greek, and he was a Roman citizen who was also a Jew. So, I mean, it could have been that case. We aren't told about that Roman guard, if he was a Jew or not. I think that since Jesus made this statement here and that statement back there, that probably he was a Jew. That was a Roman guard.
Thousands of people came to him. I don't think they were all Jewish.
I don't know. I can't say. All I know is what's recorded, and I know that specifically this is recorded as this woman not being a Jew.
Yeah.
She is a Canaanite living in the Phoenician region, Tyre and Sidon, and we know she's not a Jew. And Jesus spells that out and specifically says, "You ain't a Jew. I'm here to help the Jews." So this is the first time we see, as I recall, the first time we've seen Jesus say, "You know what? I wasn't sent to the non-Jews, so I can't really help you right now. That's not my target. That's not where my goal, not my aim." We haven't seen Jesus say this to anybody else who's come up to him. At least it hasn't been recorded for us that I'm aware of. I don't remember reading that. That being the case, I think that who Jesus was probably helping at the time were people who were Jews. Whether they were Herodian Jews, or they were Jews who were part of the Roman army, or they were Jews who were Jews in name only because they were born to a Jew, or they were proselytes. I don't know. But it seems to me that Jesus has been helping Jews, and that's been spelled out because this person who's not a Jew is specifically spelled out as not being a Jew, and Jesus says, "I wasn't sent. My target was not the non-Jews. I'm supposed to be, I am sent to help the Jews." So that being the case, since this is spelled out, I just have to defer to the word that this woman is not a Jew. And so far, everybody else who Jesus has been helping has been a Jew or a proselyte or somebody who was born to a Jew, even if they didn't claim their Jewish heritage.
This wording here, the Syrophoenician.
Syrophoenician, right?
Yeah. So,
Syrophoenician woman, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's a
Canaanite.
Syrophoenician, I probably other related to Cyrus.
Yeah, it says it meant as Syrian and Phoenician.
Yeah, okay.
It just said was narrower still in it explaining her ethnicity.
Her ethnicity, yeah. And what we see there is she's absolutely not a Jew. And Jesus spells that out for us, right?
Yeah.
lets us know that that is not who he's here to help.
It was a little out of character for him, though, to jump right on her and say, no, you're not worthy, and then to go ahead
We did see him point that out, though, with the woman at the Samaritan woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was very specific about her being a Samaritan, and she didn't lie about it, and those things came out, and Jesus talked to her. Now, Samaritans were not Jews, well, kind of Jews, mixed heritage, you know, that kind of thing. So that they were part of the Israel captivity, the first 10 tribes that blended with the Assyrians. They were there, and when they came back, they were mixed heritage, so they were considered dogs by those Jews who stayed Jewish when they were in captivity.
I mean, his response to her was like, you know, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Like, that's kind of a cryptic, but she understood it.
She did,
she
yeah.
totally understood what he was saying, because her response was, you know, well, even dogs feed off the crumbs. So I just find that she can figure out Jesus's encryptic wording.
Well, I think that the non-Jews understood how the Jews felt about them, especially those people living in the Israel proper tribal land that was given to them by when they entered the promised land, right?
Well, another thing is, we read this, but we don't know his tone of voice. So I'm sure he said it, even though he said it kindly. He didn't say, you dogs.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm guessing. I know I'm surmising.
I think the Holy Spirit, though, chooses the words very carefully so that we can understand that Jesus was a Jew. And I don't think that he was racist. I don't think that he was an ethnicist. I don't think that at all. But I think that him saying that was him recognizing how the other peoples in the land were felt by the Jews.
Oh, yeah, but we don't know his tone of voice.
Yeah.
I think he said everything kindly, even though he was criticizing.
Well, and the same phrasing was used with that woman at the well, and she understood it.
Sure.
She wasn't offended by it.
Right.
She understood how the Jews felt about the Samaritans.
But like you said, he wasn't being racist or being
mean
or cruel. He was just telling the facts.
He was being as blunt as possible. I think he was just being truthful, and she understood it. She wasn't offended by it, I don't think. She understood.
She understood it.
Yeah.
She kind of responded in a way that was back at him. She didn't even skip a beat.
Obviously,
like, well,
she's
like,
dealt with Jews before, right? She's had to deal with this kind of opinionated point of view towards her by other Jews. Because, you know, people living in these lands, they're not just isolated from each other. They're trading. And even the Jews would trade with Samaritans. That was okay. They wouldn't eat with them. They wouldn't stay in their hotels or their inns or whatever, you know, without paying money and just being a guest like they would in a Roman inn if they were going up to Rome or whatever. But they weren't friendly. They wouldn't eat with them. They wouldn't break bread with them. They would not share those intimate ideas and thoughts with them because they were not Jews. Okay, so I think what we see is Jesus recognizing that this woman is not a Jew, and this woman recognizing that she is not a Jew, and that Jesus is. Okay, I think that's pretty clear. Did Jesus accommodate the woman's request?
Yes.
Did he do it at first?
No.
Okay, he said, not at first. He said, you know what? I wasn't sent here to help those who aren't Jews. So, if so, why? And if not, why not? So let's get into that. So he said he was sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. That is obviously those who have strayed from the law of Moses and are following these hypocritical Pharisees who are teaching tradition as law, as we've just seen. And that's not okay. Jesus is absolutely livid with what the Pharisees and the Sadducees have done with the law of Moses. They've absolutely murdered God's law and replaced it with tradition. They are not upholding the standards that God had set. And so we see that Jesus is here to bring those people back. He is teaching them the good news of what's to come. He is the Messiah. He is the one who will bring them into the kingdom of God, who will give them access to God's throne room. We studied that in Hebrews. They don't have that now. They have the temple that the high priest goes into once a year to commune with God. He's going to give them access to God directly through him. And so he's here to claim those lost sheep. Actually, I didn't want to leave that yet. She kept begging. She needed help. She wanted her daughter healed. She was desperate. The disciples told Jesus, just do it so she'll leave. And even that didn't convince him to do it. We read the story about the woman who just absolutely complains to the judge over and over and over and over and over again until the judge capitulates. And I think that's what we see here. Jesus capitulates to this woman because she shows her faith. She shows that she believes that Jesus can do what he says he can do, that he is the Son of God, and that she knows that he can say the words and that her daughter will be healed. She doesn't question it. Go ahead, Ben.
I was going to say, Jesus recognized this woman had faith.
Absolutely.
And with that faith, Jesus granted her request.
Absolutely. Yep, Jesus recognized her great faith and capitulated to that woman's request. At that moment, when he said it, her daughter was healed. Again, we see this is one of those ideas where you don't have to wait for the blessing that Jesus is about to bestow to come upon you. It is when he speaks it, it happens. And she understood that, just like that Roman guard did. All right, so we're going to see Jesus is avoiding Herod's territory again. Matthew chapter 15 and verse 29. So departing from there, this is the Tyre, Sidon, Phoenician region, Jesus went along the Sea of Galilee, and after going up on the mountain, he was sitting there. So our parallel verse, Mark 7 and verse 31, says again, he left the region of Tyre and came through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee, where the region within the region of Decapolis. So, where did Jesus go after he departed Tyre and Sidon?
Galilee.
This is the Sea of Galilee, but this isn't where he has been. He's been on the western side of the Sea of Galilee.
On the coast, yeah.
Right. Well, the western side of the Sea of Galilee. He went east. And he went east past the Sea of Galilee, and then he came down on the Decapolis side of the Sea of Galilee. So let's take a look at a map here. So this is a map of the area. Here's Galilee. Here's the Sea of Galilee. We see Tyre and Sidon way up here. We see that if he was in Sidon, then he would have come back down, heading down the headwaters here to the Sea of Galilee, and then here's Decapolis down here, okay? That's this area. So he's over on this side of the Sea of Galilee. So this side of the Sea of Galilee is where he ran into the swineherders. Yeah, the swineherders. They were on this side of the Sea of Galilee. This side over here is more Herod's area. He's kind of staying out of Herod's area. He's over here. Okay? So he's on the eastern side of Galilee where he's running into more of this non-Jew kind of people, and in this Decapolis area, all right? So again, Jesus is avoiding that Herod area Because what's going on there?
They want to kill him.
They want to kill him. They want him dead. So it's not his time yet. He's avoiding that area right now. So he's going to hang out over here for a little while. So let's look at that. I didn't mean to do. Get rid of that. Let's look at Matthew chapter 15 and verses 30 through 38. Actually, let's skip that one. Let's read Mark chapter 7, verse 32 through Mark chapter 8, verse 9. If somebody wants to read Mark chapter 32, Mark chapter 7, verses 32 through the end of the chapter, and then somebody else can pick up chapter 8 and verses 1 through 9.
And they brought to him one who was deaf and spoke with difficulty. And they entered him to lay his hand upon him, or they entreated him to lay his hand upon him. And he took him aside from the multitude by himself and put his fingers into his ears. And after spitting, he touched his tongue with the saliva. And looking up to heaven with a deep sigh, he said to him, Ephphatha.
Yeah.
That is, be opened. And his ears were opened, and the impediment of his tongue was removed, and he began speaking plainly. And he gave them orders not to tell anyone, but the more he ordered them, the more widely they continued to proclaim it. And they were utterly astonished, saying, he has done all things well. He makes even the deaf to hear and the dumb to speak.
All right. And then Mark chapter 8, verses 1 through 9.
In those days again, when there was a great multitude and they had nothing to eat, he called the disciples and said to them, I feel compassion for the multitudes, because they have remained with me for 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on their way, and some have come from a distance. And his disciples answered him, where will anyone find enough to satisfy these men with bread in a desolate place? And he was asking them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7. And he directed the multitudes to sit down on the ground, and taking the 7 loaves, he thanked them and broke them and started giving them to his disciples. And then my book is sort of messed up, then to the multitudes. And they also, I had a few fish, and after he blessed them, he ordered them to be served as well. And they ate, and they were satisfied, and picked up 7 large baskets full of the leftovers of broken pieces, and there were about 4,000 there, and he sent them away.
All right. So I want to point out one thing in that last verse there. There were about 4,000 what there?
Men.
It points specifically to the men. So 4,000 fed, 4,000 men fed. But there was leftovers. Do you think it was only men in that crowd? Think they had their wives there? Think they had their kids there? Right? So I think he fed a lot more than 4,000. He fed 4,000 men. And everybody ate to their fill.
So why do we think that? Because it says about 4,000 were present. Why does it matter if it's 4,000? I mean, 4,000 is 4,000.
Well, I understand that, but
in Matthew it does mention.
Yeah. And so I guess
4,000 is a lot. Why do we have to?
It doesn't really matter.
Right.
I mean, but this one says about 4,000 men were there. If we look over at Matthew, and I did want to actually backtrack and look at Matthew, because Matthew gives us a little different information. So if we look at Matthew chapter 15 and verse 30, and it says large crowds came to him, bringing with them those who were limping, had impaired limbs, were blind, or were unable to speak, and many others. And they laid them down at his feet, and he healed them. So we see in Mark, he talks about one specific healing, but we see he's healing a lot more than that one person. He's healing people with all sorts of maladies, all sorts of health issues. He talks about the lame, the blind, the dumb, those who can't speak, and that was what he healed there, was a man who couldn't speak. Verse 31, so the crowd was astonished as they saw those who were unable to speak talking, those with impaired limbs restored, those who were limping walking around, and those who were blind were able to the sea. And they glorified God, the God of Israel. And then starting in verse 32, now Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I feel compassion for the people because they have remained with me now for 3 days and have had nothing to eat. And I do not want to send them away hungry, for they might faint on their way. The disciples said to him, where would we go to find so many loaves in this desolate place to satisfy such a large crowd? And Jesus said to them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, seven and a few small fish. And he directed the people to sit down on the ground. And he took the seven loaves and the fish, and after giving thanks, he broke them and started giving them to the disciples. And the disciples gave them to the crowds. And they all ate and were satisfied, and they picked up what was left over of the broken pieces, seven large baskets full. And those who ate were about 4,000 men, besides women and children. Okay? So, what we see here is we have more than just the 4,000 men. We have women and children as well. So, he could have fed 10,000 people with seven loaves and a few small fish.
That's why it's so important to look at the different translations and get a flavor of what each author is sharing.
Right.
Like Mark, if you just read the book of Mark, well, there's 4,000 men.
Right.
Or you go to Matthew, there's 4,000 men plus besides women and children.
Right.
And so the question I had here for you is, what miracle did Jesus perform? Okay, we saw he did healing the lame, blind, dumb, and again, like I said with Mark, when we look at just the Mark account, we see one healing. But when we look at Matthew, we see he's healing person after person after person of all sorts of maladies, all sorts of health issues that they're dealing with. So what resulted from Jesus' miracles here? What does Matthew specifically tell us?
Glorified.
They glorified God. They saw God working. Yeah, go ahead.
They glorified God of Israel. And I have a little note here from a previous study that tells me that they're mostly Gentiles here.
Okay.
And that would be significant that they would glorify the God of
Israel. Well, and as we've been looking at from the previous map, we know, I got to hit the right button. We know where he is. He's down here in the Decapolis area on the eastern side of Galilee. You're not going to find a lot of Jews hanging out over here. You will find Jews travel this way so they don't have to go through Samaria, but you're not going to find them hanging out over here. This is Gentile area.
Well, we just talked a little bit ago, though,
about
a Gentile woman that Jesus didn't want to heal.
Right.
And here he is healing multitudes of them.
Yeah, and I wholeheartedly agree. And we see that Jesus is dealing with the Jews wanting to kill him. Right? He had to go somewhere. And I don't know that all of the people here are Gentiles. I have a feeling a lot of them are. I don't know who he healed. It doesn't specifically spell out for us if they're all Gentiles, if they're all Jews, if there's a mixture of them. I can't say. We do see that Jesus was not sent and made that very plain. He was not sent to the Gentiles. He was sent to the Jews. But did that stop him from healing the Gentile?
Mm-hmm. It also says that people followed him for 3 days.
Yeah.
Right. So who knows who was following him and where they came from? And I can almost guarantee that he was pulling people from this western side of the sea over to the eastern side of the sea. Every time he left, got in a boat and went, what, he would land on the other side of the sea and what would be there? Crowds of people waiting for him. Absolutely. So I have no doubt in my mind that we have a mixture of people here. But Jesus has told us who his target is, right? Who his aim is. The Jews. If he hits a few Gentiles along the way, so be it. But that's not his aim. His aim is the Jews.
That his disciples kind of have tunnel vision. They asked Jesus, what are we going to feed these people? You know, and they just fed 5,000. And he asked them, well, how much food do you have? And now there must have been an aha moment there. With the with the Pharisees when the disciples were feeling sorry for the Pharisees having their feelings hurt. You know, it just shows that they're still deferring to the scribes and the Pharisees.
Right.
And mentally, that they're their superiors, their rulers, or whatever.
Right.
And here they are with the Son of God, working miracles.
Right. It just boggles my mind when his disciples make that statement. Why would you hurt the Pharisees feeling like that? And I see it from two different points of view. I see what you said, but I also see that these men who have been following Jesus know, they don't have Jesus' ability to read men's hearts, but I think they've got the understanding that they want to kill Jesus.
Well, sure, they're just on the road to somewhere,
yeah.
like we are, and
right.
they find comfort in that.
Right.
But the disciples, they were at that place on their road.
Right.
And I'm at wherever place I am on my road.
Right.
And I'm not there yet.
Just well, they were. Yeah, what I do think is that they understand. They see that the Pharisees want to kill Jesus, and they're saying, why are you poking the bear? Why are you stirring up the hornet's nest? Why would you do that? And it's Jesus who says, because they're stupid and hypocrites, because they're not following the law, and I'm not going to treat them like babies. These are adult men who have the law, have had it for 1,400 years, and will not follow it. They make up their own traditions and replace the law with those traditions. And that is absolutely unacceptable. I am not going to have that, and I'm going to point it out every time I see it. And his disciples say, why would you do that? Well, Jesus isn't afraid of these people. Jesus isn't afraid of the Pharisees. He understands, and he knows that they are going to be the death of him. But he's not afraid of it. And he's not going to back down. He's not going to surrender the word of God to these hypocrites. And he says that as often as he can. We're going to see him say that to the Pharisees time and time again. You hypocrites, you vipers, you brood of, you know, we're going to see that as we go into our study further down the road. That he is absolutely not going to back down from these people when he comes across them. Now, we have also seen that he knows when it's time to get out of Dodge, and he gets out of Dodge. He does it. But he knows he's going to be back in town. He knows that he won't be gone forever, and that he's going to have to deal with these Pharisees again. So he's not going to change what he's doing, and he's going to continue to make them mad to the point where they do kill him. So the next one we have here is Jesus again withdraws from Herod's territory. If we look at Matthew chapter 15, verse 39 through 16 and verse 12. Let me get in there. So Matthew chapter 15 and verse 39 reads, and sending away the crowd, Jesus got into the boat and came to the region of Magadan. All right. So he's got into the boat and went on the Sea of Galilee, across the southern tip of Sea of Galilee, okay? And somebody want to read Matthew chapter 16, verses 1 through 12.
The Pharisees and the Sadducees came to Jesus. They wanted to trap him. So they asked him to show them a miracle to prove that he was from God. Jesus answered, when you see the sunset, you know what the weather will be. If the sky is red, then you say we'll have good weather. And in the morning, if the sky is dark and red, then you know that it will be a rainy day. You see these signs in the sky, and you know what they mean. In the same way, you see the things that are happening now, but you don't know their meaning. Evil and sinful people ask for a miracle as a sign. They will have no sign, only the sign of Jonah. And Jesus left them and went away. How far do you want to go?
It's 12.
Jesus and his followers went across the lake, but the followers forgot to bring bread. Jesus said to them, be careful, guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Followers discussed the meaning of this. They said, did Jesus say this because we forgot to bring bread? Jesus knew they were talking about this, so he asked them, why are you talking about not having bread? Your faith is small. You still don't understand. You still don't understand? Remember the 5 loaves of bread that fed the 5,000 people? And remember that you filled many baskets with bread after the people finished eating? And remember the 7 loaves of bread that fed the 4,000 people? Remember that you filled many baskets then also? So I was not talking to you about bread. Why don't you understand that? I am telling you to be careful and guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And the followers understood what Jesus meant. He was not telling them to guard against the yeast used in bread. He was telling them to guard against the teaching of the Pharisees and the Sadducees.
All right. And then let's also look at Mark chapter 8, verses 10 through 26. This is the parallel passage. And I'll have somebody read verses 10 through, 10 through 21, and somebody finish up 22 through 26.
And immediately he entered the boat with his disciples and came to the district of Dalmanusa. The Pharisees came out and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. Sighing deeply in his spirit, he said, why does this generation seek for a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation. Leaving them, he again embarked and went away to the other side. And they forgot to take bread and did not have more than 1 loaf in the boat with them. And he was giving orders to them, saying, watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. They began to discuss with one another the fact that they had no bread. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, why do you discuss the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000? How many baskets do you not remember? When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces you picked up? They said to him, 12. When I broke the 7 for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of broken pieces did you pick up? And they said to him, 7. And he was saying to them, do you not yet understand?
Then somebody read 22 through 26.
They came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man to him and entreated him to touch him. And taking the blind man by the hand, he brought him out of the village. And after spitting on his eyes and laying his hands upon him, he asked him, do you see anything? And he looked up and said, I see men, for I'm seeing them like trees, and trees walking about. Then again he laid his hands upon his eyes, and he looked intently and was restored and began to see everything clearly. And he sent him to his home, saying, do not even enter the village.
All right. So we, from these two readings, we can get the idea that Jesus is teaching with parables again, right? He's using parables to teach, and time again, we saw this a couple weeks ago, he uses parables to teach, and what do they say? Explain to us what the parable means. He gives them a relatively down-to-earth, easy thing to understand. When he says, avoid the yeast or the leaven of the Pharisees, right? We've just seen what he did to the Pharisees, calling them hypocrites, pointing out their hypocrisy, showing the people around him what the Pharisaical message does to those who listen. It causes them to sin. Jesus points that out again. He says, avoid the leaven of the Pharisees. Avoid sin, because that's all you're going to get from what they're teaching. They're not teaching the word of God. They're not even teaching the law of Moses. They're teaching the traditions of men. And he's accused them of that time and time again. And he's going to continue to do that. He calls them sinners because they're asking for a sign. Tells them only sinners ask for a sign. How many signs do they want? What has he been doing this whole time?
Signs.
He's been healing people who are sick, who are lame, who are blind, who are deaf. He's feeding people with a miraculous amount of food that comes from nothing. What more sign could they want? What else could he do that they would capitulate that he's the Son of God? There is nothing he can do that's going to satisfy these people. These Pharisees will not believe. Their hearts are hard, and they're far from God. He is the Son of God, and they will not admit it, even though he is doing the things that only God could do. There is no one on earth who could feed 5,000 people with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Not unless you're slicing it like, what's that Japanese food? Sashimi that slices and look through it.
Yeah.
But even then, you're not going to feed 5,000 people with that. But he did it. I mean, what more sign do they want? We're not going to get through everything we had tonight. The next one was Peter's great confession. And then after that, he talks about, in Matthew chapter 16, verses 21 through 28, he talks about his death again. He tells his disciples that he's going to be dying, that he is going to be given up. The Son of Man must suffer many things, he says. And then we also see that, and I'm sorry we didn't get to it, the transfiguration that happened tonight. We just don't have time to get to it. There's just, I tried to divide this up so we're not going for the whole year, but we're not going to hit everything some of these weeks because there's just so much to cover. But Jesus' transfiguration and that doesn't mean that you didn't get a chance to read it, and I hope you are. The point of the syllabus was that you'd get an opportunity to read through it and to look at what we're studying tonight. Hopefully you read it and you understand what we're looking at. I'm just pointing out some of the things that got my attention, okay? And the transfiguration is such a great story, but I try to hit some of the smaller things that we kind of overlook sometimes. Some of the stuff that I try to bring out, some of the weaker material. The transfiguration speaks for itself. I don't think we need to go any further than that. Jesus' glory shown in truth, what he really is in his spiritual form. And that's amazing, so amazing that his disciples wanted to build altars right there. Well, an altar to Jesus, an altar to Moses, an altar to Elijah, right? And Jesus had to bring them back to earth and say, wait a minute. No. That's not what you're here. That's not what this is about. This was about you seeing what it is like to be a spiritual person. All right? The healing of the demonic boy that's in Caesarea Philippi. And then the last part of what we were supposed to get to tonight was the return to Galilee. And again, Jesus talks about his coming sacrifice. But again, didn't have time to get through all that tonight, so hopefully with the syllabus in hand, you get a chance to read that. If you haven't, I encourage you to do it. Next week, we'll be looking at week 15 in the syllabus.